Chapter 31. The Far Snows. The streets of Ironrod ran straight and met at right angles, were necessary slicing through hills that were otherwise neatly terraced with stone. The slate-roofed stone buildings had an angular look, as if they were all vertical lines. Ironrod had not fallen to Culloden. No people had been there when the Shido swept through. A good many of the houses were only charred beams and hollow, ruined shells, however, including most of the wide three-story marble buildings with balconies that Moraine had said belonged to merchants. Broken furniture and clothes littered the streets, along with shattered dishes and shards of glass from windows, single boots and tools and toys. The burning had come at different times. Rand could tell that much himself, from the weathering of blackened timbers and how much smell of char lingered where. But Lan had been able to chart the flow of battles by which the town had been taken and retaken. By different houses contending for the Sun Throne, most likely, though from the look of the streets, the last to hold Ironrod, had been brigands. A good many of the bands roaming Carrion held allegiance to no one and to nothing except gold. It was to one of the merchants' houses that Rand went, on the largest of the town's two squares, three square stories of gray marble with heavy balconies and wide steps with thick angular stone side rails, overlooking a silent fountain with a dusty round basin. A chance to sleep in a bed again had been too good to pass up, and he had hopes that Avienda would choose to remain in a tent. Whether his or with the wise ones, he did not care, so long as he did not have to try going to sleep while listening to her breathe a few paces away. Recently, he had begun imagining he could hear her heartbeat, even when he had not taken hold of Saidin. But if she did not stay away, he had taken precautions. The maidens stopped at the steps, some trotting around the building to take positions on all sides. He had feared that they would try declaring this a roof of the maidens, even for one night, and so as soon as he had chosen the building, one of the few in town with a sound roof and most of the windows unbroken, he had told Sulin that he was declaring it the roof of the Winespring brothers. No one could enter who had not drunk from the Winespring in Emmons Field. From the look she had given him, she knew very well what he was up to, but none of them followed him beyond the wide doors that seemed to be all narrow vertical panels. Inside, the large rooms were bare, though white-robed Guy Shine had spread a few blankets for themselves in the broad entry hall. Its high plaster ceiling worked in a pattern of severe squares. Keeping Guy Shine out was beyond him, even had he wanted to, as much so as keeping Moraine out if she was not asleep elsewhere. Whatever orders he gave about not being disturbed, she always found a way to make the maidens let her by, and it always took a direct command for her to go before she would leave. The Guy Shine rose smoothly, men and women, before he had the door closed. They would not sleep until he did, and some would take turns remaining awake in case he wanted something in the night. He had tried ordering them not to, but telling a Guy Shine not to serve according to custom was like kicking a bale of wool. Whatever impression you made was gone as soon as your toes were. He waved them away and climbed the marble stairs. Some of those Guy Shine had salvaged a few bits of furniture, including a bed and two feather mattresses, and he was looking forward to washing and... He froze as soon as he opened the door to his bedchamber. Avienda had not chosen to remain with the tents. She stood before the washstand with its mismatched cracked bowl and pitcher, a cloth in one hand and a bar of yellow soap in the other. She had no clothes on. She seemed as stunned as he, as incapable of moving. She stopped to swallow, big green eyes locked on his face. I could not make a sweat tent here in this town, so I thought I would try your way of... She was hard muscle and soft curves. She glistened damply from head to feet. He had never imagined that her legs were so long.
I thought you would remain longer at the bridge...
Her voice rose in pitch, her eyes widened in panic.
I did not arrange for you to see me. I must get away from you, as far away as I can. I must.
Suddenly, a shimmering vertical line appeared in the air near her. It widened as if rotating into a gateway. Icy wind rushed through it into the room, carrying thick curtains of snow.
"I must get away,"
she wailed, and darted through into the blizzard. Immediately the gateway began to narrow again, turning. But without thought, Rand channeled, blocking it at half its former width. He did not know what he had done or how, but he was sure this was a gateway for traveling, such as Asmodian had told him of, and been unable to teach him. There was no time for thinking. Wherever Avienda had gone, she had gone naked into the heart of a winter storm. Rand tied off the flows he had woven as he ripped all the blankets from the bed and tossed them onto her clothes and pallet. Seizing blankets, clothes, and rugs altogether, he plunged through, only moments behind her. Icy wind screamed through night air filled with swirling white. Even wrapped in the void, he could feel his body shivering. Dimly he could make out scattered shapes in the darkness. Trees, he thought. There was nothing for him to smell but cold. Ahead of him, a form moved, obscured by darkness and the snowstorm. He might have missed it, but for the sharpness of his eyes in the void. Avienda, running as hard as she could. He lumbered after her through snow to his knees, clutching the thick bundle to his chest. "Avienda, stop!" He was afraid that the howling wind would sweep his shout away, but she heard. And if anything, ran faster. He forced himself to more speed, staggering and tripping as the deepening snow tugged at his boots. The prints left by her bare feet were filling fast. If he lost sight of her in this... "Stop, you fool woman! Are you trying to kill yourself?" The sound of his voice seemed to flog her to run harder. Grimly, he pushed himself, half falling and scrambling back up, knocked down by the hurtling wind, as often as stumbling in the snow, blundering into trees. He had to keep his eyes on her. He was only thankful this forest, or whatever it was, had trees so far apart. Plans skittered across the void and were discarded. He could try quelling the storm, and maybe the result would be to turn the air to ice. A shelter of air to keep the falling snow away would do nothing for that underfoot. He could melt a path for himself with fire and slog through mud instead. Unless... He channeled, and the snow ahead of him melted in a band a span wide, a band that ran ahead of him as he did. Steam rose, and falling snow vanished a foot above the sandy soil. He could feel the heat of it through his boots. Down almost to his ankles, his body shook with the bone-chilling cold. His feet sweated and flinched away from the heated ground. But he was catching up now. Another 5 minutes and... Suddenly the vague shape he had been following vanished as if she had fallen into a hole. Keeping his eyes fixed on the spot where he had last seen her, he ran as hard as he could. Abruptly, he was splashing in icy, flowing water to his ankles, halfway to his knees. Ahead of him, the melting snow revealed more, and an edge of ice inching slowly back. No steam rose from the black water. Stream or river, it was too big for the amount of his channeling to warm the swift-moving flow even a hair. She must have run out onto the ice and fallen through. But he would not save her by trying to wade into this. Filled with sidine, he was barely aware of the cold, but his teeth chattered uncontrollably. Retreating to the bank, gaze locked on where he thought Avienda had gone down, he channeled flows of fire into the ground still bare, well back from the stream, until the sand melted and fused and glowed white. Even in this storm, that would stay hot for a time. He set the bundle down in the snow beside it. Her life would depend on finding the blankets and rugs again. Then waded through the deep white to one side of the melted path and lay flat. Slowly he crawled out onto the snow-covered ice. The wind shrieked across him. His coat might as well not have existed. His hands were numb now, and his feet going. He had stopped shivering except for an occasional shudder. Cold lay calm inside the void, he knew what was happening. There were blizzards in the two rivers, perhaps even as bad as this. His body was being overwhelmed. If he did not find warmth soon, he would be able to calmly watch from the void as he died. But if he died, Avienda would too, if she had not already. He felt rather than heard the ice cracking beneath his weight. His probing hands fell into water. This was the place. but with snow whirling about, he could barely see. He flailed, searching, numb hands splashing. One hit something at the edge of the ice, and he commanded his fingers to close, felt frozen hair crackling. Got to pull her out. He crawled backward, hauling at her. She was a dead weight, sliding slowly out of the water. Don't care if the ice scrapes her. Better that than freezing or drowning. Back. Keep moving. If you quit, she dies. Keep moving, burn you. Crawling. Pulling with his legs. Pushing with one hand. The other locked in Avienda's hair. No time to get a better grip. She could not feel it anyway. You've had it easy for too long. Lords kneeling and Guy Shine running to fetch your wine and Moraine doing as she's told. Back. Time to do something yourself if you still can. Move, you flaming fatherless son of a spavined goat. Keep moving. Suddenly, his feet hurt. The pain began creeping up his legs. It took him a moment to look back, and then he rolled off the steaming patch of melted sand. Tendrils of smoke, where his breeches had begun smoldering, were whisked away by the wind. Fumbling for the bundle he had left, he swathed Avienda from head to foot in all of it, the blankets, the rugs of her pallet, her clothes. Every bit of protection was vital. Her eyes were closed, and she did not move. He parted the blankets enough to put an ear to her chest. Her heart beat so slowly that he was not sure he was really hearing it. Even four blankets and half a dozen rugs were not enough, and he could not channel heat into her as he had the ground. Even finding the flow as much as possible, he was more likely to kill than warm. He could feel the weave he had used to block open her gateway, a mile or perhaps two away through the storm. If he tried to carry her that far, neither of them would survive. They needed shelter, and they needed it here. He channeled flows of air, and snow began to move across the ground against the wind, building into thick, square walls, three paces on a side, with one gap for a door, building higher, compacting the snow till it glistened like ice, roofing it over high enough to stand. Scooping Avienda into his arms, he stumbled into the dark interior, weaving and tying flames dancing in the corners for light, channeling to scoop more snow to close the doorway. Just with the wind shut away, it felt warmer, but that would not be enough. Using the trick Osmodian had shown him, he wove air and fire, and the air around them grew warmer. He did not dare tie that weave off. If he fell asleep, it could grow and melt the hut. For that matter, the flames were almost as dangerous to leave, but he was too bone-weary and chilled to maintain more than one weave. The ground inside had been cleared as he built, bare sandy soil with only a few brown leaves he did not recognize, and some scruffy, low, dead weeds that were equally strange to him. Releasing the weave that warmed the air, he heated the ground enough to take away the iciness, then took up the other weave again. It was all he could do to lay Avienda down gently, rather than drop her. He pushed a hand inside the blankets to feel her cheek, her shoulder. Trickles of water ran across her face as her hair melted. He was cold, but she was ice. She needed every scrap of warmth he could find for her, and he did not dare warm the air more. Already the insides of the walls shone with a faint layer of melt. However frozen he felt, he had more heat in him than she did. Stripping off his clothes, he climbed into the coverings with her, arranging his own damp garments on the outside. They could help hold in the body heat. His sense of touch, enhanced by the void and Sidene, soaked in the feel of her. Her skin made silk feel rough. Compared to her skin, satin was... Don't think. He smoothed damp hair away from her face. He should have dried it, but the water no longer felt so cold, and there was nothing but the blankets or their clothes to use anyway. Her eyes were closed. Her chest stirred against him slowly. Her head lay on his arm, snuggled against his chest. If she had not felt like winter itself, she could have been sleeping. So peaceful, not angry at all. So beautiful. Stop thinking. It was a sharp command outside the emptiness surrounding him. Talk. He tried talking of the first thing that came to mind. Elaine, and the confusion her two letters brought. But that soon had thoughts of golden-haired Elaine drifting across the void, of kissing her in secluded spots in the stone. Don't think of kissing, fool. He shifted to Min. He had never thought about Min that way. Well, a few dreams could not count. Min would have slapped his face if he ever tried to kiss her, or else laughed and called him a woolhead. Only it seemed that speaking of any woman reminded him that he had his arms around a woman who had no clothes on. Filled with the power, he could smell the scent of her, feel every inch of her as clearly as if he were running his hands. The void trembled. Light, you're only trying to warm her. Keep your mind out of the pigsty, man. Trying to drive thought away, he talked of his hopes for Kyrian, to bring peace and an end to the famine, to bring the nations behind him without any more bloodshed. But that had its own life, too, its own inevitable path to Sheol Ghul, where he must face the Dark One and die, if the prophecies were true. It seemed cowardly to say that he hoped he might live through that somehow. Aiel did not know cowardice. The worst of them was brave as a lion.
The breaking of the world killed the weak, he had heard Bale say, and the threefold land killed the cowards.
He began speaking of where they might be, where she had brought them with her wild, senseless flight. Somewhere far and strange to have snow at this time of year. It had been worse than a senseless flight. Mad. Yet he knew that she had fled from him. Fled from him. How she must hate him, if she had to flee as far as she could, rather than just tell him to leave her to her bath in privacy. I should have knocked. At his own bedroom door? I know you do not want to be around me. You don't have to be. Whatever the wise ones want, whatever they say, you are going back to their tents. You will not have to come near me again. In fact, if you do, I'll send you away. Why hesitate on that? She gave him anger, coldness, bitterness when she was awake, and asleep. It was a crazy thing to do. You could have killed yourself. He was stroking her hair again. He could not seem to stop. If you ever do anything half so crazy again, I'll break your neck. Do you have any idea how I will miss hearing you breathe at night? Miss it? She drove him crazy with it. He was the one who was mad. He had to stop this. You are going away, and that's that. If I have to send you back to Roydian. The wise ones can't stop me if I speak as Kaa Karn. You won't have to run away from me again. The hand that he could not stop from stroking her hair froze as she stirred. She was warm, he realized. Very warm. He should be wrapping one of the blankets about himself decently and moving away. Her eyes opened, clear and deep green, staring at him seriously from not a foot away. She did not seem surprised to see him, and she did not pull back. He took his arms from around her, started to slither away, and she seized a handful of his hair in a painful grip. If he moved, he would have a bald patch. She gave him no chance to explain anything. I promised my near sister to watch you. She seemed to be speaking to herself as much to him, in a low, almost expressionless voice. I ran from you as hard as I could to shield my honor. And you followed me even here. The rings do not lie, and I can run no more. Her tone firmed decisively. I will run no more. Rand tried to ask her what she meant while attempting to untangle her fingers from his hair, but she clutched another handful on the other side and pulled his mouth to hers. That was the end of rational thought. The void shattered and Saidin fled. He did not think he could have stopped himself had he wanted to. Only he could not think of wanting to, and she certainly did not seem to want him to. In fact, the last thought he had of any coherency for a very long time was that he did not think he could have stopped her. Some considerable time later, 2 hours, maybe 3, He could hardly be sure. He lay atop the rugs with the blankets over him, and his hands behind his head, watching Avienda examine the slick white walls. They had held a surprising amount of the warmth. There was no need to latch onto Saidin again, either to shut out cold or to try warming the air. She had done no more than rake her fingers through her hair on rising, and she moved completely unashamed at her nakedness. Of course, it was a bit late to be ashamed of something as small as having no clothes on. He had been worried about hurting her when dragging her out of the water, but she showed fewer scrapes than he did, and somehow they did not seem to mar her beauty at all.
"What is this?" she asked.
"Snow." He explained what snow was as best he could, but she only shook her head, partly in wonderment, partly in disbelief. For someone who had grown up in the waste, frozen water falling from the sky must seem as impossible as flying. According to the records, the only time it had ever even rained in the waste was the time he had made it. He could not stop a sigh of regret when she began pulling her shift over her head. "The wise ones can marry us as soon as we get back." He could still feel his weave holding her gateway open. Avienda's dark reddish head popped through the neck of the shift and stared at him flatly. Not unfriendly, but not friendly either. Determined, though.
"What makes you think a man has the right to ask me that? Besides, you belong to Elaine."
After a moment, he managed to close his mouth.
"Avienda, we just... the two of us...
Light, we have to marry now. Not that I'm doing it because I have to," he added hastily. "I want to."
He was not sure of that at all, really. He thought he might love her, but he thought he might love Elaine, too. And for some reason, Min kept creeping in.
"You're as big a lecher as Matt."
But for once, he could do what was right because it was right. She sniffed at him and felt her stockings to be sure they were dry, then sat down to don them.
"Egwene has spoken to me of your Two Rivers marriage customs."
"You want to wait a year?"
he asked incredulously.
"The year, yes, that is what I meant."
He had never realized before how much leg a woman showed pulling on a stocking. Odd that that could seem so thrilling after he had seen her naked and sweating and... He concentrated on listening to her.
"Egwene said she thought of asking her mother's permission for you, but before she mentioned it, her mother told her she had to wait another year, even if she did have her hair in a braid."
Avienda frowned, one knee almost under her chin.
"Is that right?" "She said a girl was not allowed to braid her hair until she was old enough to marry. Do you understand what I am saying?" "You look like that fish Moraine caught in the river."
There were no fish in the waste. Aiel knew them only from books.
"Of course I do," he said. He might as well have been deaf and blind for all he understood.
Shifting under the blankets, he made himself sound as sure as he could manage.
"At least... well, the customs are complicated, and I am not certain which part you are talking about."
She looked at him suspiciously for a moment, but Aiel customs were so intricate that she believed him. "In the Two Rivers, you walked out for a year, and if you suited, then you became betrothed and finally married." That was as far as custom went. She went on as she dressed.
I meant about a girl asking her mother's permission during the year, and the wisdoms. I cannot say I understand that."
The white blouse going over her head muffled her words for a moment.
"If she wants him, and she is old enough to marry, why should she need permission?"
"But you see, by my customs..."
Her tone of voice said they were the only ones that mattered.
"It is my place to choose whether to ask you, and I will not." "By your customs..."
Fastening her belt, she shook her head dismissively.
"I did not have my mother's permission." "And you would need your father's, I suppose, or your father-brother's, since your father is dead?" "We did not have them, so we cannot marry."
She began folding the scarf to wrap around her forehead.
I see, he said weakly.
Any boy in the Two Rivers who asked his father for that kind of permission was asking to have his ears soundly boxed. When he thought of the lads who had sweated themselves silly, worrying that someone, anyone, would find out what they were doing with the girl they meant to marry. For that matter, he remembered when Nynaeve caught Kimri Lewin and Barr Dowtree in Barr's father's hayloft. Kimri had had her hair braided for 5 years, but when Nynaeve was through with her, Mistress Lewin had taken over. The women's circle had nearly skinned poor Barr alive, and that was nothing to what they had done to Kimri over the month they thought was the shortest decent time to wait for a wedding. The joke, told quietly, where it would not get to the women's circle, had been that neither Barr nor Kimri had been able to sit down the whole first week they were married. Rand supposed Kimri had failed to ask permission. But I guess Egwene wouldn't know all the men's customs, after all, he continued. Women don't know everything. You see, since I started it, we have to marry. It doesn't matter about permissions.
You started it?
Her sniff was pointed and meaning. Aiel, Andrin, or anything else, women use those noises like sticks to prod or thump. It does not matter anyway, since we are going by Aiel customs.
This will not happen again, Randall Thor.
He was surprised, and pleased, to hear regret in her voice.
You belong to the near sister of my near sister. I have toe to Elaine now, but that is none of your concern.
Are you going to lie there forever?
I have heard that men turn lazy after, but it cannot be long until the clans are ready to begin the morning's march. You must be there.
Suddenly a stricken look crossed her face, and she sagged to her knees.
If we can return, I am not certain that I remember what I did to make the hole, Randall Thor. You must find our way back.
He told her how he had blocked her gateway and could still feel it holding. She looked relieved and even smiled at him. But it became increasingly clear as she folded her legs and arranged her skirts that she did not mean to turn her back while he dressed.
Fair's fair, he muttered after a long moment and scrambled out of the blankets.
He tried to be as nonchalant as she had been, but it was not easy. He could feel her eyes like a touch even when he turned away from her. She had no call to tell him he had a pretty behind. He had not said anything about how pretty hers was. She only said it to make him blush anyway. Women did not look at men that way.
And they don't ask their mother's permission to...
He had an idea that life with Avienda had not become one bit easier.